Have you started researching your family history after seeing your DNA results? Coming up, a clergywoman from Iowa tells us how it helped her appreciate the struggles and stories of her Viking ancestors. We'll also hear how the sights and tales of ancient Ireland resonate with the Irish today. But our first stop on this hour's travel with Rick Steves is along the timeless west coast of Scotland. In some ways, the traditions of Scotland survive most vividly in its islands off the west coast. These are the Hebrides. We've invited two of our favorite Scottish guides into the studio to share stories and tips on their favorite islands. Liz Lister is from Fife, Cullen Mares is from Glasgow, and they're both here with us now to share a little better understanding of Scotland's inner Hebrides. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Hey, Cullen, when you think about the Hebrides, we hear that word a lot, Hebrides. These are the islands off of the west of Scotland, but there's inner and outer Hebrides.
Yeah.
What's the story there?
So the inner Hebrides, they're basically the ones that are closer to mainland Scotland, the outer Hebrides further out. So probably most people going to visit islands off the coast of Scotland, they'll go to the inner Hebrides, easier to access.
Liz, when you're thinking of the inner Hebrides, which ones are your favourites and which one's the most popular with the tourists?
Well, Oban, which is on the west coast of Scotland, is known as the Charing Cross of the islands. There's a saying, the earth unto the Lord belongs and all that it contains, except the Kyles and the Western Isles, for these are all McBrains. And McBrains, Caledonian McBrains, are the ferry company. So people will come to Oban, and that's the jumping off point to go to the islands.
So Oban is the Charing Cross. Charing Cross would be the big train station in London where you depart to go to different places. So Oban would be the jumping off point. It's the big port on the mainland from where the ferries go.
Absolutely.
So Kyles, what is Kyles?
Kyles are the stretches of water. So the little islands are skerries.
So the straits and the bays.
Isles and the Kyles.
So everything is the Lord's except for the isles and the waters.
Kyles. McBrains are the major link backwards and forwards to the islands. They carry passengers, they carry freight, they carry tourists.
So this is the ferry system, Caledonian McBray, is that what
that's
it
correct.
Is?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, because every time I think of an island scene, there's a dramatic ferry coming across it. It's just a beautiful thing.
And you have the jumping off point in the railway terminal at Oban. And so people coming from Glasgow will directly connect with the ferries and go out. So in answer to your question, probably the most two popular are the ones closest, so Mull and Iona we can come back to because Iona is really accessible as a day for a particular reason.
Okay, so you got Mull and you got Iona because those are the first stops on the ferries are very close by. Cullen, when you think of the inner Hebrides, what are some of the names that come to mind of the islands, the major islands?
So you've got Mull and Iona and you've got Skye, that's probably the most well-known one. There's islands with quite humorous names like Muck, Egg and Rum.
Muck, Egg and Rum.
Yes.
Have you been to any of those islands?
I've not actually, no. But you see them as you drive towards when you're going by ferry to the Isle of Skye.
Now, the island that is so famous now and so trendy really is Skye. And when you think about Skye, what should a traveller know if they want to visit Skye?
Skye is really popular because it's got a bridge. So some of the people from the other islands of the Hebrides, they'll claim that Skye is no longer an island. It's just part of the mainland now. It's linked. But it's very hot just now, very, very popular, and you've got some of the most amazing scenery in all of Scotland, especially in the
north
of the Isle of Skye.
You can drive up to viewpoints and take beautiful hikes, go to the far north and see ruined castles, drive by peat bogs.
Yes.
When you see a peat bog, what do you think?
Well, I think about whiskey. but peat bogs, that's where people for centuries have taken the peat from the ground, and peat is like coal but a few thousand years younger. And they'll put the peat on the fire to warm the home, and it's also used in the whiskey industry for drying out the barley. It gives Scotch whiskies the peaty, smoky flavours.
So if you want to visit a whiskey distillery, they're all over Scotland.
Yeah, you've got two on the Isle of Skye, and one just right next to Skye on the Isle of Rassy, 25-minute ferry ride.
Would they be particularly peaty because this is peat?
Well, Talisker is the longest established distillery in Skye, for a long time the only distillery there, and it's a medium peaty whiskey.
And I'd like to welcome you aboard the Isle of Mull for a sailing to Oban.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with tour guides Cullen Mares and Elizabeth Lister, and we're talking about the Inner Hebrides Islands in Scotland. And Cindy in Kerry, North Carolina, emailed us, and Cindy writes, "We visited the Isle of Skye by renting a car from Inverness and driving there. The driving was quite an experience with not only driving on the left-hand side, but also single-track roads and livestock encounters." It's a place that is really difficult to be on time schedule-wise. You have to allow a lot of time for getting around, even if the distance don't look very far on a map. So that's interesting when you're driving. It is handy to have a car for the Isle of Skye, and you can rent one at Inverness. I think the roads are pretty good from Inverness to Skye.
Yeah.
And then you get on Skye, and what's driving on Skye like?
So driving in Skye in some parts, especially when you go north of Portree and around that loop called the Trotternish, you've got a lot of parts that are single-track road, and they'll just have passing places.
Right.
So you've got to kind of understand how they work. It's basically, we drive on the left, and so you pull in only to the left. So basically, whoever's closest to, if you're coming head-to-head on a Skye standoff,
right,
then it's the person who's got the closest space to them on their left, they should pull into that one.
Into that. So there are these little pull-outs, very strategically positioned.
And also, because of the pressure of tourism, a lot of the smaller islands, not just Skye, but the smaller islands with the single-track roads, they say that they don't drive on the left in Mull, they drive on what's left.
Oh, now that's a good way to put it. Liz, when you drive around the islands, you're likely to see traditional lifestyles, and you hear people referring to a crofter. What's a crofter?
People think that a croft is the house that's built on the land. A croft is actually a package of land on which the crofter had to build their own house. Now, they were in a terrible situation that if they improved their house, they didn't own the land, they were simply tenants. And so for a long time, if they improved their home, the factor, the manager of the land, could take the home away from them. And so they were basically enslaved. And that led to the crofting acts of the 1800s, where people began to get ownership of their land so that it could pass it on from generation to generation. So now there's so much red tape that they say that a croft is a package of land wrapped up in red tape.
Oh my goodness. So when we think about the Highland clearances and the crofters and so on, There must be museums that let you learn about that as a traveller. What's one that you would recommend?
So on the Isle of Skye, in the very far north of the Isle, there's a place called the Museum of Island Life. And it's basically a collection of preserved, some of them were real houses that people lived in, croft houses. Other ones have been built just to house more parts of the museum. And so it just shows the traditional way that people lived on the Isle of Skye, the traditional architecture and way of life.
It's a delightful, intimate little chance to go into a home, a stone home with a sod roof, and imagine what it was like on that windy, desolate corner of the British Isles.
Yeah, so they're thatched roofs, and they're built to fit in with the landscape. They're aerodynamic, really, taking that fierce winds off the sea.
They survive the wind. What are a couple of more things you might see or do while you go to Skye?
So one of the other main attractions in Skye is Dunvegan Castle. So that's over towards the west, near to the town of Dunvegan. And that's the home of the MacLeods. It's one of the big clans, and they claim to be the longest continuously inhabited castle in Scotland, inhabited for over 800 years now.
So you took me to a place that has not been continuously inhabited, but is actually quite old. Describe that. And how old is it?
So it's known as Dunbeg Broch. It is several thousands of years old.
So going back like Stonehenge time.
Yes, it's Stonehenge time, sort of 3,000 years old or so.
But you stand on that hilltop and you see all these stones scattered all around, and you think those were all stacked up together and made a fort.
Yeah, and so if you see it or see a picture of it, it was once upon a time five times that height. Basically a defensive structure where the people could get inside and get safe with their animals, and it was a lookout point as well, see anyone coming attacking from the sea.
Our guides to Scotland's Inner Hebrides are Cullen Mares, who offers custom tours of New Zealand and Australia when he's not leading them in Scotland during the summer, and Liz Lister, who arranges tours of Scotland from her home base in Fife and co-hosts the Scottish Blethers podcast. We have links to their websites and more about Scottish history at ricksteves.com/radio. Liz Lister, one of the most famous destinations in the Inner Hebrides is the enchanting Isle of Iona. What's special about Iona?
It is absolutely enchanting. People go there for the peace and tranquility of this beautiful island. As you leave Finnefert, which is the port on Mull, it's a 10-minute ferry journey back in time. There's a community, a religious community on Iona, which was started by a man called George MacLeod. In the 1930s, he lived on the Clyde in Glasgow, and he was a minister. And he wanted to be able to give the opportunity to preach and become ministers to young people in the community. But he also saw the terrible unemployment, and he wanted to give craftsmen work and apprenticeships. So he brought the two together to restore the abbey on the island of Iona. And still today, on the walls of Iona Abbey, there's a saying which says, "The earth is thin here, where tissue paper separates the spiritual from the material world." And you feel it, you get it as you step off the boat. Yes. This is a spiritual place that has drawn people right back to the time of St. Columba.
St. Columba. And he brought Christianity to Scotland. What century would that have been?
St. Columba was the 600s, the 7th century.
The 600s.
And he was born the son of a royal family in Donegal in Ireland. He was raised to become a priest. It was said that he burned like a fierce light, that he could bring the word of Christianity to people. But the roots aren't clear. It seems that he got himself into trouble. Some say that he went into battle. Some say that he copied the first act of plagiarism. But for whatever reason, he was exiled. And he was told that he had to sail until he could no longer see his beloved Ireland. So he sailed to Colonsay, climbed a hill. He could still see Ireland. He sailed on. He landed on Iona, climbed a hill, and he could no longer see Ireland. He travelled with a group of 12 followers who were friends and family. One of them was a man called Orin, his uncle. And Uncle Orin said that he would make a human sacrifice of himself and that he should be buried alive. So they buried Uncle Orin, threw earth over his head and left him for 3 days. And after 3 days, they dug him up again. Orin sat up and he said that there was no great wonder in heaven and hell wasn't all that it was described as. And so this was totally against the teachings of Christianity. So they shouted, "Earth, earth o'er Orin's eyes, lest he blab some more." And this time when they buried him, they didn't dig him up again.
I haven't heard that story. Next time I go to Iona, I'll ask a local person about that.
He has a chapel. He's got that consolation. You have St. Orin's chapel.
Hmm. Well, even if you're, regardless of your religion or if you're not even a religious person, when you do go to Iona, there is something special about the atmosphere there and it's well worth the trip.
Absolutely.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking about the Inner Hebrides of Scotland, and we've been joined by our tour guides, Cullen Mares and Liz Lister. Thanks, both of you, for helping us better understand this beautiful part of Scotland.
Thank you.
On behalf of Caledonian McBrain, we'd like to thank you for travelling with us today, and we hope you have a pleasant cruise. Thank you.
We'll look at Ireland's ancient stories in just a bit. But first, Laurie Erickson tells us how researching her family history in Norway revealed how the spirit of her Viking ancestors influenced who she is today. It's Travel with Rick Steves.